Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's Pop Culture and Entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here in the studio with Stephen Thompson of NPR Music. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Stephen is a panelist with me on Pop Culture Happy Hour. Our regular co-panelist, Glenn Weldon, is just back from Comic-Con. He missed this week's regular show, so that's the bad news. The good news is that while he was in San Diego, he did a radio piece for Weekends on All Things Considered. And not only that, but our regular panelist, Petra Mayer of NPR Books, did a piece for Weekend Edition.
Yeah, Glenn did a piece on hard science fiction and how used Comic-Con as a jumping off point for a discussion of that. Petra did a piece on the 75th anniversary of Wonder Woman.
That's right. First up, we're going to hear Glenn Weldon talk about hard and not-so-hard science fiction.
There are over 1,000 panel sessions at Comic-Con every year, where attendees gather for a Q&A with their favorite author, a behind-the-scenes peek at the craft of comic book making, or a discussion of some nerdy academic topic. And this year, several of these panels are devoted to the same issue, the interplay of science and storytelling. It's something attendees like Jody Meadows care deeply about.
One of the great things about science is that we don't know everything yet. We're still learning. So there are people who want to know how to make warp drives, so they're trying it. I think that science fiction inspires more science.
Her friend, Cynthia Hand, thinks about how to balance science fact with science fiction.
I think that if you can get us to believe in the reality of the story based on the real facts, then it's easier to make this sort of jump when you want something to be unreal.
Many here strongly believe that the science in science fiction should be firmly grounded in reality. They are devotees of what's called hard sci-fi, which emphasizes technical detail and scientific rigor. If you've read Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, or Catherine Acero, you've read hard sci-fi. Andy Weir's The Martian is a recent example.
I'm going to have to science the shit out of this.
Of course, there's more to science fiction than hard sci-fi. Writers like Samuel R. Delaney, Ray Bradbury, and Ursula K. Le Guin are more interested in how technology changes people than the technology itself. For the two most successful science fiction franchises in history, scientific rigor isn't really what they're about. Lightsabers in Star Wars, transporter beams in Star Trek, and faster-than-light travel in both of them, all scientifically impossible today, and likely tomorrow as well. Which is why some here, like attendee Steve Hendricks, say neither Star Wars nor Star Trek is science fiction at all.
Well, Star Wars, of course, is complete fantasy. Star Trek, the whole bit about transporters being able to work, it's pretty far-fetched. Being able to work without a mechanism at the far end, it's almost a deal-breaker for me. But I can figure, what the heck, you know? I can let that one slide.
For these folks, it comes down to storytelling. Tell me a story is what many fans here say they want. Assert the rules for the reality you're creating. Don't explain them. And be consistent. Do that, and readers will buy it. Most readers, anyway, not all. There will always be fans who insist on strict accuracy. The Simpsons knew that when, almost 20 years ago, they set a scene in a conference room at a convention a lot like this one.
In episode 2F09, when Ichi plays Scratchy's skeleton like a xylophone, he strikes the same rib twice in succession, yet he produces two clearly different tones. I mean, what are we, to believe that this is some sort of a magic xylophone or something?
That's, of course, a parody of the inflexibility of nerds, but for the nerds I talk to, they're okay with a little magic in the mix. Glenn Weldon, NPR News, San Diego.
Wonder Woman turns 75 this year. She first swung her golden lasso in All-Star Comics number 8 in December 1941. And today, she's still fighting for freedom and the rights of women. NPR's Petra Mayer attended some of her birthday celebrations at San Diego Comic-Con.
1, 2, 3.
The sound of Wonder Woman's famous invisible jet plays out of speakers in a parking lot in San Diego's Gaslamp Quarter. DC Entertainment is marking the Amazon's birthday by unveiling a replica of the jet that fans can climb into for pictures. April Meneghetti was first in line.
You know, Wonder Woman is just the ultimate woman. She's strong. She's doesn't need a man. You know, she's a powerful, the ideal woman, I think, you know?
That's a sentiment I've been hearing a lot of this week. Isola, who only goes by that one name, was waiting her turn for the jet in an elaborate armor-plated costume she made herself.
So, if you can hear this, breastplate's hard as a rock. I could probably, you know, stop a bullet.
What does Wonder Woman mean to you?
She's empowering. She represents a strong woman. And I hope that I can be like her.
And that's pretty much in line with what Wonder Woman's creator, William Moulton Marston, intended. A psychologist with connections to Margaret Sanger's birth control movement and a strong interest in feminism, he invented Wonder Woman as an antidote to what he called the blood-curdling masculinity of the comics. Arriving on comics pages just as the horrors of World War II were descending, Wonder Woman would rise above male aggression, she almost never kills, and she would leave her home on Paradise Island to fight for America, the last citadel of democracy and of equal rights for women.
She really is the first superhero humanitarian.
That's Jim Lee, the co-publisher of DC Comics and a former Wonder Woman artist himself. He says Wonder Woman's lasted so long, partly because of good timing. She was just one of the first female superheroes. But also,
it is an interesting, unique tale of someone that basically is giving up a life of comfort to take on conflict and to be a crusader for justice and peace.
Oh, okay.
And I think those are the things that give characters their longevity.
It's the story that connects us to superheroes, Lee says, not the gadgetry, not the bullet-deflecting bracelets or the golden lasso. Wonder Woman has sometimes had trouble connecting. Like many long-lasting superheroes, she's been through many incarnations, from fierce Amazon to romance editor to taco joint waitress. She became a feminist icon, appearing on the first cover of Ms. Magazine in 1972 and on the TV show that made a generation of fans fall for Linda Carter.
You're about to tell me everything you know.
But there were years when fans just weren't paying attention. Now, however, that may be changing.
Let's check out the trailer for Wonder Woman.
In a packed and sweaty ballroom at San Diego Comic-Con, hundreds of fans roar as the big screen flashes a trailer for the upcoming Wonder Woman movie. Gal Gadot, who stars as the Amazon princess, is here on stage.
There's not many female superheroes that we are exposed to. And the fact that we have Wonder Woman coming back big time now is just so important.
The Wonder Woman movie will be out next year, and filmmakers hope to hook a new generation of fans, like 8-year-old Chloe Samily and her 9-year-old friend Winona Fabi, who are both dressed up as their favorite superhero.
She's a really good superhero. She can fly. She has a rope.
She saves people. And she becomes a human and then a superhero when she spins.
Not bad for a 75-year-old. Petra Mayer, NPR News, San Diego.